He was Indiana's Mr. Basketball, a two-time college All-American, and the tournament MVP of an undefeated national champion before playing 11 years in the NBA. Not bad for an awkward kid who once tripped over the out-of-bounds line. Growing up and up in a basketball hotbed, he set a high standard for himself at an early age, even imagining himself as Mr. Basketball while in the eighth grade. That dream came true in 1973 when he became one of the most highly recruited players in the country and had his pick of colleges. He chose IU largely because he saw a fit with a legendary recruiting class that arrived a year ahead of him and went on to become a central figure on two of the greatest teams in the history of college basketball. His junior year, the Hoosiers won every game, most of them easily, and won the NCAA tournament championship. He was named MVP of the Final Four and earned All-American honors. His senior year was tougher as he was left behind to lead a rebuilding team, but he was named the Big Ten's MVP and an All-American once again. He scored a career-high 38 points against Michigan State as a junior and still ranks as IU's second all-time leading rebounder. He went on to become the number one pick in the NBA draft, and despite a violently difficult beginning to his career, played 11 seasons in the league. I'm Mark Monteith, and I'm going one-on-one with the man they called Benny back in Bloomington, Kent Benson.
This is One-on-One with Mark Monteith on 1070 The Fan. Brought to you by Georgetown Market, Indy's family-owned natural food store since 1973. Movie Time Video Productions, they make your memories last forever. Pita Pit, have you had your pita today?
Okay, today One-on-One comes to you over the phone lines with a true Indiana basketball legend, Mr. Basketball in 1973, an All-American at Indiana University, a name people know, Kent Benson from Newcastle, Indiana. Kent, I ordinarily kind of just start off with the beginning of everyone's career. I think in your case, you know, people have been seeing you on television occasionally from games at Mackey Arena. So just to answer those questions, you know, why is that? How is it that you're going to the Purdue games at Mackey Arena these days?
Well, I've been a big Matt Painter fan and have been. Matt's become a great friend of mine, and I enjoy watching good basketball.
Now, you were at the game. Well, we're speaking on Wednesday morning, the morning after Purdue and Indiana played up at Mackey. Are your emotions torn in that kind of situation? You're a friend of Matt Painter's, but you're a graduate, a former player at IU. Do you find yourself pulling for one team over the other in that case, or do you just kind of watch it objectively?
Mark, I just sit there and watch it objectively. I like watching a good game. I think Indiana played hard. Purdue didn't play as well as they could have. It was a good game. Unfortunately, there has to be a winner and a loser.
Okay, well, let's go back to the beginnings of your career. You were born in Newcastle. Was your dad an athlete? Did you inherit athleticism from dad's side of the family, your height and so forth? Or?
Well, my father was not an athlete. My father was a farm boy and was very involved with farm implement, dealership. Worked several jobs as we were growing up, several at a time, just to feed myself and my brother and three sisters. So the five of us and mom, my dad worked sometimes three and four jobs at a time and never had time for the athletic part, but was very supportive of my career, my brother's career, my sister's. So very, very supportive in every aspect and so thankful and blessed that I had parents that were so giving and so willing to provide that environment and atmosphere for me.
How big was dad?
6'4".
Okay.
6'3", 6'4", and mom's 5'11". Of course, with age, they've shrunk a little bit, as we all have. But I get my height basically, I think, from both sides. My grandfather was about 6'5". He had two brothers. One was 6'6", 6'7". On my father's side, my grandfather was only about 5'8", but back further, a generation or so, there were 7'4" pounders. So the way I understand it, I've got it coming from both sides.
That's a good thing then. Well, growing up in Newcastle, it would have been difficult, especially for a kid like yourself who is unusually large, not to become interested in basketball. Newcastle, obviously a hotbed, one of the great high school arenas in the world. Can you talk about your beginnings with basketball and what sparked your interest in the game and when you really started playing?
Well, Mark, I think the greatest recollection was being bigger than everybody else in my school. I attended St. Anne's Catholic School there in Newcastle, and as a fourth grader, I was bigger than the fifth and sixth graders, and ended up playing on the fifth and sixth grade team as a fourth grader. That started my career, and was very blessed to have coaches that, you know, that took an interest in me as not only an athlete but as a person. And I think growing up in that Catholic environment, the Catholic school and the CYO league, I had great mentors in that regard. So they kind of set the foundation and for me and my love for basketball and my desire to continue to play. Because even though I was big and clumsy and awkward and uncoordinated and all those things, they still gave me an opportunity to enjoy the game and for it to become a part of my life. And as I grew and developed, why being bigger than everybody else, it gets a lot of attention. And of course, the junior high school coaches and of course, my high school coach, Cecil Tagg, a Hall of Famer, Coach Cecil Tagg, took an interest in me real early. And actually, kind of put his job on the line by having the junior high coaches make sure that they played me a lot and gave me an opportunity to play and develop into a decent basketball player. That's something that he could work with once I got to be an eighth grader and a freshman.
As a kid, did you like being tall, or was it a case where kids were making fun of you and you felt awkward and you didn't really like being one of the biggest kids? Or did you recognize at an early age, hey, I could do something with this size?
Well, Mark, I'd have to say that there was advantages and disadvantages both ways there. I got made fun of. I was picked on by the older kids because of my size. I wasn't as mature as they were, but I was as big as they were. But, you know, I had a lot of fun with that, and especially afterwards as I got to be even bigger than everybody else. And use that to my advantage, never to hurt anybody, but to have fun and to joke with them. But of course, being big, you have a lot of opportunities, too, and a lot of advantages. And I wouldn't trade my size now for, you know, being smaller in any way, shape, or form.
Oh, sure, sure.
I've been blessed.
Did the game come fairly naturally to you, or were you awkward at first? Was it difficult to pick it up?
Mark, I was really awkward. Awkward, uncoordinated, clumsy, so to speak. But I go back to coaches, teachers, individuals in the community who had a genuine interest in me, not only as a player but as a person. They wanted to see me succeed, and they were willing to work with me, and as long as I was willing to work. And I remember coaches, I think it was Coach Cecil Tagg, my high school basketball coach, said that he'd work as hard as I would if I was willing to do the things that it took to be successful. And you know, I really didn't know or understand what success was all about until I read some of John Wooden's great quotes. And John Wooden's quote on success is, he said, "Success is the peace of mind which is a direct result of self-satisfaction in knowing that you've done your best to become the best you're capable of becoming." And when you have people like my grade school coaches, like my junior high school coaches, like Coach Tagg, Coach Knight, these people who are instrumental in my development, they had a genuine interest in me, and they believed in me when I didn't believe in myself. I think of one of the great high school players at Newcastle, who's 6-7 years older than me, Steve Schmidt, 6'11", bigger than I was, took me out as a 7th and 8th grader and just beat me to a pulp on the basketball court, made me tougher, and showed me things and taught me things and became a friend to me and encouraged me, allowed me to pal around with him. I mean, he treated me as if I was one of his teammates, even though I was, you know, 6 years, 7 years younger than him. And so I'm very grateful and very thankful for that. And I believe that has helped me develop as a player and as a person. And of course, my parents were very encouraging and supportive, as well as my brother and my sisters, and an entire family, for that matter.
Did you, as a junior high kid, when you're just learning the game, have any embarrassing moments? I often hear from some great athletes that as a kid, as a young player, they had some embarrassing moments in the game. Anything stick out in your mind?
Oh, I've had had several opportunities, of course, and I'm sure a few of them have mentioned scoring baskets at the wrong end.
Absolutely. Did you do that?
So excited, not knowing enough about basketball that my team's basket was at the other end, but all I knew was to put it in the basket. And then this was back in grade school, and of course, being awkward and clumsy, I had big feet, and so I would trip over them once in a while. And I remember, I think it was a freshman playing on the varsity, and one of my first games, we come running out of the tunnel at Chrysler Fieldhouse. And, you know, they've got the out-of-bounds line painted all the way around the court, and it just so happened my big feet, my clumsiness happened to be on that line. I got teased and razzed about that, tripping over the line.
Tripped over the out-of-bounds line.
Yeah. Of course, not being able to walk and chew gum at the same time, and that's definitely how clumsy I was as well.
Benson gets a memorable lecture from a study hall monitor and picks a college when One-on-One continues. Welcome back to One-on-One. Mark Monteith here with former Indiana Mr. Basketball and IU All-American Kent Benson. He learned early what it was going to take to have major success in basketball and followed through to the point that he could have gone just about anywhere he wanted to play college ball. Here's why he chose the Hoosiers.
You mentioned the people in your life who helped you. Were there players or teams that, you know, people you didn't know, teams you watched on television or players you watched on television who kind of inspired you or who you really liked and maybe tried to model yourself after?
Well, not really, because I didn't get a chance to watch much TV growing up. We watched a little bit, but that was a very, very low priority. In fact, it was an event in our family, but I'm thankful for that. But I did have players. I enjoyed watching the great ABA Pacers back then. Get a chance to watch a few of their games. As I got a little older in high school, I enjoyed watching Dave Cowens play for the Boston Celtics.
You say watching television was an event. Were there certain programs that you were like allowed to watch or that the family would gather to watch?
Oh, yeah. Disney. Walt Disney. We used to
Sunday
watch
night.
Walt Disney on Sunday nights. And we'd have popcorn and our one Coca-Cola, even though Dad worked for the Coca-Cola plant, we got one Coke during the week. On Sunday night, we made it a family event, and it was one of those, you know, where the family that prays together stays together. Well, the family also that does things together stays together. I've been so blessed about having that in my life.
Now, we know you were Mr. Basketball in 1973, but I'm curious, at what point in your high school career did you start thinking, hey, I could do something with this. I can get a college scholarship. I could, you know, I can be a player.
Well, Mark, I vividly remember and recall in my life that was very, very instrumental. The high school trainer, his name's James Pink Worthington. We called him Pink. And Pink was at the junior high in the study hall. He was a study hall teacher, and I remember as an eighth grader being in study hall, and of course I was studying very hard as a very proper student would. I was drawing pictures, and I happened to be drawing a picture, and that picture happened to be a picture of a basketball player with Indiana number one, Indiana All-Star number one on his jersey, and of course he had red hair.
What a coincidence.
What a coincidence. And, you know, I was very studious doing the things that I was supposed to be doing in study hall. And Pink was making his rounds, just checking on the students, as he always did. And he stopped, and he was across the table from me, and he sat down. He says, well, he picked up the picture. He says, what's this all about? I said, well, you know, I want to be Mr. Basketball. I have dreams and goal of being the best player in the state of Indiana. And he said, you know, he got very serious. He says, Kent, he says, do you know what it's going to take to accomplish that? And this is where I learned about the four D's. And he said, Kent, it's going to take four D's. He says, desire to be the best that you can be, the wanting to be the best you can be, the determination to be the best that you can be, to be willing to set goals for yourself and to do the things that it takes to be successful. He said, dedication, desire, determination, dedication. He said, you're going to have to be willing to sacrifice and give up some things that some of your peers, some of your classmates are doing, some of the fun things. It's going to take a lot of work. You're going to have to be willing to dedicate yourself. And fourth, he says, it's going to take a lot of discipline. So desire, determination, dedication, and discipline. He says, the type of discipline that comes from within. He says, you've got to be willing to do the things that it takes to be successful. He says, Kent, he said, successful people do the things that unsuccessful people don't and won't do. And I tell you this all as if it is, as if Pink was sitting across the table from me now lecturing me on this. I mean, I had tremendous respect for him and admiration for him. But to hear him tell me the things that it would take, and then he said, Kent, he said, excellence is being the very best that you can be in everything that you do, in every way that you do it. And he said, that's what it's going to take to accomplish what you've drawn here. Bottom line is, it's up to you. You know, that was a big dream of mine. I saw I could play at the high school level. That was a dream. I knew that I could accomplish that. But I had, I don't know why, I had got to thinking more about my opportunity to play the game of basketball and play it at a higher level, because the love for the game had become such a part of me that I began to think it and live it and love it. I'm not exaggerating. Of course, we didn't have the distractions that kids have today, and all the electronics and you know, television, and the video games and what have you. But it was not unusual for me to play basketball 8, 10, 12, 14 hours a day. And being there in Newcastle provided that atmosphere, that opportunity with our Baker Park courts, basketball courts, being lit 24 hours a day. I mean, it was lit all night long. Chrysler was big at the time and ran three shifts. So you could go out to the park and you would see games going on all through the night. You know, we weren't getting any trouble. We were just constant games, people playing pickup games, and it was a great atmosphere and a great opportunity for me to, at a young age like that, to play with and play against older players, more mature players, more experienced players, along with Steve Schmidt, his willingness to help me and work with me. My coach, Cecil Tagg, working with me and providing those opportunities and situations for me that just motivated me to continue to strive to be the best that I possibly could be.
Yeah. What became of Steve Schmidt, by the way? What's he doing today?
Steve Schmidt is out in Boston, and Steve is battling cancer right now. Mm. And he's a gallant warrior, I'm telling you what. He's had some absolute miracles in his life, and so thankful for that. He is he's in remission, and he's really taken it's really taken a toll on him, but we stay in contact every couple of weeks. So,
well, you do become Mr. Basketball in 1973, and you're one of the most highly recruited players in the country. You of course go to Indiana and play for Bob Knight. But what was the recruiting experience like? I remember reading how you went to Kentucky and they really wooed you. Talk about the schools you visited and what that experience was like.
Well, Mark, I was blessed to have a lot of attention and an opportunity to play college basketball anywhere in the country. And I took some things in great consideration, because I had people that were kind of mentors to me, and I knew what I wanted, and they helped me sort it out. And what I did is I selected four schools to visit. And those four schools, number one was Notre Dame. Of course, growing up Catholic, Notre Dame was on a pedestal. One of my cousins was a great running back, Andy Huff, for Notre Dame football. Digger was a great friend of our families and highly respected and everything. So Notre Dame had a high priority on my list. Number two was Purdue, because growing up in an agricultural community with a farm background, having lots of friends that were farmers, and having showed dairy cattle and being involved in 4-H and all that, I had an interest in Purdue. Number three was Indiana. Of course, Indiana, because of the fact that it's the state name university, and didn't know a whole lot about Indiana other than watched them play a few times on TV. Butch Joyner, who played in back in 65, I think it was. Butch was from Newcastle, my hometown. Danny Danielson, who happened to be the president of the Board of Trustees at Indiana University, was from my hometown. A lot of people from Newcastle were IU fans. So I had a vested interest in that as well. And the fourth place was Kentucky. And all four of those schools were, one of the priorities was traveling distance for my parents and my family and friends to be able to watch me play. Sure. I wanted them to have that opportunity. That was very important. And so my visit, I visited all four schools in a matter of a couple weeks. And Notre Dame was first, second was Purdue, the third was Indiana. And at Indiana, I fell in love with the players. Steve Green, John Laskowski, Quinn Buckner, Scott May, Bobby Wilkerson, Tom Abernathy. All these guys, I really, really clicked with, and I felt that Indiana was an opportunity for me to step in and be a part of something that Coach Knight had put together to that point, and I could be a deciding factor in our success as a team, and hope that I would be able to accomplish that. So I signed my Big Ten letter of intent, and sitting there in Coach Knight's office, my next visit a couple of days later was to Kentucky, and Coach wanted me to cancel that trip, and I really didn't want to, because I had committed to do that. But anyway, I go down to Kentucky, and because I had committed to it, had a great visit, fabulous visit, and bottom line was that I really wanted to play pro basketball after I graduated from college. And I felt that if I went to Kentucky, that I'd have to take a cut in pay to turn pro. And I wasn't willing to do
so. That's great. But, so did they talk about that openly? Hey, if you come here, we'll do this.
Oh, yeah. The recruiting stories are true. It's amazing. But anyway, I chose to go to Indiana, and the 4 years there with the great players. The neat thing about it, Mark, is that those players weren't only great players, but they were great individuals and human beings as well.
Benson relives his career at IU and relates an embarrassing moment that remains a classic story for his teammates when One-on-One continues. Back on One-on-One, Mark Monteith here with former IU All-American Kent Benson. Upon choosing IU, Benson became the final piece of a team that would become legendary in college basketball. But it wasn't all glory. His final season with the Hoosiers was pretty much a year in hell. And then there was that legendarily embarrassing moment as a freshman that he's still living down with his teammates.
where you come in a year after that unbelievable class of Quinn Buckner and Bobby Wilkerson and Scott May and Tom Abernathy, and Steve Green's a couple years older than you. So, I mean, he's got things rolling there as you come in. And, you know, you're a four-year starter there. You averaged 9.3 points as a freshman. As a sophomore, you are part of that undefeated team that probably would have won a championship if not for Scott May's injury up at Purdue. And then as a junior, of course, IU goes undefeated and wins the national championship. And still, you know, nobody's done that since then. Winning that national championship as you did in 76 on an undefeated team, and you're an All-American, and I think you were the MVP of the tournament. You know, what does that mean to you today? What's the impact of that on your life as we speak today?
Well, first of all, let me just say this, that 35 years later, today, you know, I'm still honored and humbled by that experience. I believe that God has so blessed my life and directed me and my steps in this way. And what's neat, Mark, is that there isn't a day that doesn't go by that people still talk about that championship team, that game, or our season, or our team. And you know, it's 35 years later, and it's like it happened just yesterday, because I've been over the last 35 years being able to live that experience every day. And it's so such an honor and so humbling to have people talk about and wanting to do interviews and, you know, ask us our opinion and our thoughts and everything. And just so thankful for that experience that I had with these guys and the continued relationship that we have.
Are there specific memories or stories from that season that you find yourself telling or remembering the most, you know, either funny things or dramatic things or whatever?
Oh, well, I guess probably the most famous story, if some of my teammates already haven't told it, was when I was a freshman, you know, coming from Newcastle, why Muncie, Indiana, Ball State University is just 14 miles from my hometown. So one of my best friends did not go to Indiana. He went to Ball State. And we're on a road trip up to Muncie to play Ball State my freshman year. We're in the bus, and we're heading to the Muncie Central Field House where the game is played. And we're on Ball State's campus, and here I'm sitting there at the window, I'm looking out, and I'm thinking, you know, I'm going back to home, going to have hometown fans and friends at the game, and I'm thinking, you know, here I am on Doug Eckerty's Ball State University campus. Doug was a great friend of mine in high school, and I'm thinking, wow, it'd be neat to see Doug, you know, and we're driving along, and the bus comes to a stop. And I look out the window, and in that parking lot, getting ready to get in his car, is Doug Eckerty. You know, here I am a freshman, and that's no excuse, but I was excited because here I'd just been, you know, thinking about him. And so I throw open the window of the bus and yell out, "Hey, Eckerty!" And I'm waving at him and everything, and all of a sudden I feel all these hands grab a hold of me and throw me down in my seat and shut the window. And I thought, uh-oh, I realized what I'd done. Here we are on our way to the game. Coach Knight's in the bus. And I look around. Every one of my teammates, if looks could kill, I'd have been dead. and they just shook their head like, you know, you dumb freshman.
And so, green kid.
We're a few minutes away from the gymnasium. And, you know, Coach Knight didn't say anything. Didn't say a word when it happened. And so I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, wow, you know, maybe I got away with that one. So the bus pulls up to the Muncie Field House and it comes to a stop, and everybody starts to get up, and Coach Knight stands up and he says, "Sit down." He says, "Who was the blankety blank 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 that yelled out, 'Hey, Eckerty'?" And the next thing you know, I mean, everybody just turned and looked at me. And that was, you know, it was a funny experience. It was a very devastating experience for a freshman to experience as well. The wrath of Coach Knight, of course, right before a game. But the most infamous name in Indiana basketball history, who had nothing to do with Indiana basketball, was Eckerty, and his story still is talked about today. So, it, you know, for those who can understand and appreciate the intensity of going to a game on a bus with Coach Knight, and you know, in preparation, the mental preparation, and you know, one of the things that Coach Knight's always said is that the mental is to physical as four is to one. The mental is four times greater than the physical. And so that situation was a very monumental teaching experience, learning experience for me.
Yeah. How did you play that night?
You know what? I don't recall. I think I played okay.
But. Yeah. Well, your senior year, now today, if you were playing, you would have probably turned pro after your junior year. You probably would have left with all those other guys, or in fact, they might have already been gone. Who knows in today's environment? But, you know, those guys, Buckner, Wilkerson, Abernathy, Scott May, all enter the draft, and you're left behind with a young team, a bunch of freshmen coming in, Mike Woodson, Butch Carter, and those guys, and you're an All-American on a rebuilding team, and that in fact turned out to be the only team Coach Knight had that did not get to a postseason tournament. And you probably don't remember this, but I covered that team for the Indiana Daily Student. That had to be a difficult year for you, that senior year.
It really was. I would have had probably turned pro. I had an opportunity to leave as a junior, but you know what? I had made a commitment to Coach Knight. I was concerned that wherever I went to play college basketball, that I was going to be coached by the same coach for 4 years that I was there. If I was going to be there for 4 years, I wanted to make sure he was going to be there for 4 years, and basically that was the agreement too. And so I agreed to stay my senior year, and I don't regret it. I mean, looking back and all, but I just it was very difficult season in 1977.
Yeah, you know, Coach Knight's coming off an undefeated season in a championship team, and suddenly he's got, you know, he's starting freshman, and there's, you guys finished 16-11, I think, when you factor in forfeited games, and you averaged 19.8 points and 10.4 rebounds. You're the Big Ten's most valuable player and an All-American again. So for you individually, it's a successful year, but I know he put a lot of expectations on you. And, you know, having been there at practice some of those days, I know it wasn't easy for you by any means, you know. And can you talk about your relationship with Coach Knight, you know, the ups and downs of it and where it stands today?
Well, Coach Knight is doing very well for himself. He's, you know, he's had a great coaching career, and now is embarking on the game analyst career, and does a great job with that. You know, he knows the game and is very articulate about it, and calls the game as he sees it as well. So, you know, I admire and respect that of him. I have my relationship with Coach is not as close as maybe a couple of the other players, but you know, I always wish him great success and happiness.
Vincent recounts that horrible beginning to his NBA career and brings us up to date on what he's doing today. But first, here's this IU teammate, Tom Abernathy, recalling that infamous moment on the bus during Vincent's freshman season.
I hate to pick on our underclassmen. We love Kent, Vincent, and but as the younger guy, you know, in our group, probably the most fun memory, and I think Kent laughs about it as much as anybody, happened when we were playing a game at Ball State. And I think Kent must have been a freshman. And Eckerty is the guy's name. Eckerty, he just yells his name like two or three times. So it stunned all of us. And we have more laughs about the Eckerty story than just about anything that we had during those 4 years.
But, so for years after that, you're probably always bringing up the name Eckerty, is that it?
Or? Oh, yeah. Yeah, every time, not every time, but most of the time when I'm with Steve Green and with, you know, Offeld and Quinn and Jimmy Cruz, any of those guys, Scotty, you know, we'll go through that story and just laugh about it. And, you know, Kent was, you know, young, and so, you know, that's why I hate to to say it because it at his expense, but it was something that we shook our heads and scratched our heads and laughed about, and we're thankful that it wasn't us.
We're back on One-on-One. Mark Monteith here today with former IU All-American Kent Benson. He played 9 seasons in the NBA for 4 different teams, but is probably best remembered for getting punched in the head by Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Let's let Benson set the record straight on what happened in his NBA debut.
You are the number one pick in the NBA draft by the Milwaukee Bucks. You play 11 NBA seasons, average 9.1 points. By any measure, that's a huge success because, you know, the number of people in the world who have played 11 NBA seasons is pretty small when you consider all the players who want to do that. But, you know, the story is well known. Your first game against the Lakers and Jabbar, you know, you elbow him as you're posting up and he punches you in the face and breaks your jaw. He breaks his hand.
Well, Mark, let's back up and tell the story as it really is.
Okay.
Okay. That's the press and the media story, okay? First of all, I out-jumped Kareem at the tip-off, which I'm not supposed to do that. Second, we come down the floor. Brian Winters takes a shot. He misses it. I go up over Kareem, get the rebound, and score. Well, he had elbowed me several times prior to that, and a few more times. He's the one that initiated the elbowing, all right? I run down to our defensive end, their offensive end of the floor, to set up in the spot that Kareem likes to shoot his hook shot on. And in doing so, he comes down the floor and drives his elbow into my chest. And I take and elbow him back when we're jostling for position. I'm watching the ball come up the floor. He falls back about 10 feet away from me and runs up and sucker punches me.
Right.
Me from behind.
Right, that's right.
But all you see on these videos or whatever is me elbowing him first and then him retaliating that way. They don't show what started it.
Yeah, you're right, because I had not. All I've seen is what you just described.
And,
yeah.
And also, he did not break my jaw. He knocked me silly, no doubt about that, but he hit me so hard he broke his hand. And he was fined, the largest fine the NBA had fined at the time, and he missed like 21 games as
right,
well.
Right. Did you miss games?
I think I missed 2 or 3.
Okay.
Yeah, because I had he hit me in the temple, and I had a black and swollen eye. It was I didn't have a concussion, but I missed a couple of games because of it, I think.
Okay. Did that have any impact on your career? You know, your first game having that happen. Was that a setback, or was it just missing a couple games?
You know, the critics say that it did. It took everything away from me, and yada yada yada. You know, and I don't buy that. Did it have an impact on me? Yeah, I think it had some impact, but not a devastating one. You know, I showed that I could stay in the league for 11 years, and actually I walked away with 2 years left to go on my contract under my own terms and conditions, and that's something in itself as well, and I feel good about that.
That's unusual, because I've talked to many players, including some of the, say, the ABA Pacers, for example, guys who had great careers who were cut and are bitter still today, you know, for this or that, you know, so for any athlete to be able to walk away on their own terms, that's an accomplishment in itself.
Well, you know, I look back, and I think the average lifespan, when I say lifespan, the average years a player played in the league was 3 years. I don't know if that's true today or not, but around that time, it was around 3 years. So to go 4 times longer than that is quite a career, I think.
Yeah, like we said, 11 years in the NBA. As you look back on that part of your life, what were the highlights? What were the highlights of your NBA career?
Also, one of the things is I guess I could have stayed around and been a journeyman and went from team to team to team and try to get, you know, 3, 4, 5 more years out, something like that. But I chose not to do that.
Yeah.
I'm sorry I didn't miss your question.
Well, that's okay. Just saying, what were the highlights of your NBA career as you look back on that portion of your life? You know, what stands out as, you know, your best memories, the, or the most highlights, or the most difficult times?
I think the most difficult time in my life was just the transition from playing the game of basketball for fun and for an education to playing basketball as a job, being a job. And, you know, over the next few years, it went from being really a lot of fun and enjoyable to a job. And when that happened, I think I lost something there. It wasn't, you know, it's a goal you set for yourself and you strive for all these years. And then once you get there, it's not as glamorous as a lot of people think. Of course, now, today, with the astronomical amount of money that these guys get, that's pretty phenomenal.
You have been one of the more outspoken players, IU players, about what was going on in IU's program when Kelvin Sampson was there, and your disgust and frustration with all the things that happened there during that time. Do you want to speak to that and also where you are with the program today?
Let me just say this, that they made their decisions, and right, wrong, or indifferent, I don't agree with it, and that's fine. I don't have to support it, and I choose not to.
What are you doing today, Kent? What's keeping you busy?
I'm in the fundraising business. I help high school sports teams raise money to cover the cost of their expenses, their shoes, practice packs, uniforms, equipment, travel expenses, and what have you. I work with a company by the name of Top Profits Fundraisers. And then I've also been a co-founder of the Indiana Class Basketball All-Star Classic, which we host in Newcastle, the world's largest high school gymnasium. They're in Newcastle, Indiana, and we're in our third year. We have junior games. The junior All-Stars play on June 17th this summer, and then the senior games are on June 18th. We have really been blessed. Our event is among the, along with the Indiana-Kentucky All-Star Series, the Top 60, the North-South game, the Hoosier Reunion Classic, are the only All-Star Series in the state that doesn't charge kids to participate, $1. Steve Streming, who is my partner and great friend, he has XL High School Sports. Steve and I decided that we wanted to, when, you know, 12, 14 years ago, when Indiana went from the single class system to the class system, they forgot one integral part, and that was the All-Star Series, the All-Star Games. And the All-Star Games have been focused on the 4A kids with a few 3A kids, boys and girls. So they're missing out on most of the 3A kids, 2A, and 1A kids. And we felt that if it's going to be a class system, they should have a class All-Stars as well. Your Division I kids are all pretty much signed by that time, but D2, D3, NAIA, junior college teams and coaches are looking to fill their rosters, and this provides them an opportunity. We have about 196 kids participating in this All-Star event, and it gives these coaches at these colleges an opportunity to see these kids. And we've been able to help get several kids scholarships to continue their basketball career, and really excited about that and blessed by it, and blessed by the fact that we do this as a not-for-profit organization.
It's interesting that as somebody who went to a really large high school and played in the largest high school gym in the world, you're kind of looking out for the little guy here.
Well, you know, I think it's only right. I love kids. I love helping kids, and that's why I'm in the fundraising business, and that's why I'm doing this, is because I want to help kids advance as much as they possibly can and give them every opportunity. And we feel that our Indiana Class Basketball All-Star Classic has done that and has continued to do so. You can ask the IBCA, you can ask any of the coaches around the state their thoughts and feelings about it, and as well as the participants. And the neat thing is these kids get a real opportunity to be showcased in front of a lot of people, fans and coaches alike.
So those games, again, will be played in June in Newcastle.
Yes, June 17th for the Junior All-Stars and June 18th for the Senior All-Stars.
More with Kent Benson in a moment. But first, here's announcer Bill Fleming relating some of Benson's highlights in the Hoosiers championship game victory over Michigan in 1976.
All the experts agreed this was the finest 20 minutes of basketball they had ever seen. Indiana completely dominating the second half. One of the Hoosier stars was Kent Benson. Connecting here on the hook shot, making the score, Michigan 39, Indiana 37. In the second half, Benson missed only 2 of 8 shots, in addition to pulling down 6 rebounds.
We are back to close down this chapter in the one-on-one series. Thanks to Kent Benson for sharing his time and memories. You know, he and I have a lot in common. We both had red hair back in the day. We both graduated from high school in 1973. We both graduated from IU in 1977. And we've both been kicked out of practice by Bob Knight. The only difference is that, he was Mr. Basketball and I wasn't. And he was the Big Ten's most valuable player and I wasn't. And, he was an All-American, too. And the number one pick in the NBA draft. But other than that, we got a lot in common. By the way, he's got a daughter, Ashley, who's a 2-time All-American on IU's volleyball team. They're believed to be the first All-American father-child combo in IU's history, and one of the few at any school in the NCAA's history. Now remember, if you want to hear any of the one-on-one episodes, all the podcasts are available on our website at 1070thefan.com. And my email address is mark@1070thefan.com. And I'll be back next week with a special tribute to Indiana broadcasting legend, Tom Carnegie. He not only handled public address announcing at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, he broadcast the state high school basketball tournament, was the sports director at Channel 6 back when it was WFBM, and co-founded the Indiana Basketball Hall of Fame. We originally aired a one-on-one episode with Tom back in May of 2009, so in the wake of his recent passing, we'll bring that to you once again next Sunday and Wednesday, right here on 1070 The Fan.